You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, frequent storms, more intense storms, and high water levels can all contribute to erosion in shoreline communities. We hear from a Wisconsin lawmaker about legislation that attempts to help address that issue. Right now, it's time for our weekly look at news stories from around the state. This time around, we're talking with different reporters about the ways Wisconsinites are responding and supporting each other since schools and many businesses have shut down to slow the spread of the novel coronavirus. Miranda Suarez is the WPR Lee Esther News Fellow. She's based in Madison and has been reporting on how COVID-19 is affecting the city. Miranda, thanks a lot for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Miranda, let's start off in restaurants. Obviously, a really challenging time for restaurant owners and the people who work for them. You talked to some restaurant owners in the Madison area. What kind of things did you hear?
Yeah, so we heard from restaurant owners a couple days ago, either right before the restaurant ban was enacted or right after. And kind of what I'm hearing from them was it's time to adjust to a new normal. And when I spoke to them a couple days ago, they weren't quite sure yet how that was going to happen and if the new business models that they kind of have to adopt during this time are even going to be profitable.
And what kind of things are you hearing from them and about from community members about supporting restaurants and their employees?
Yeah, so I spoke to the owner of a restaurant in Madison called the Alchemy Cafe. One thing that he was saying was just keep ordering, right? His restaurant hadn't been designed kind of for a takeout delivery model, which restaurants have to follow now. But he's saying the best thing you can possibly do is spend your money there, order takeout, order delivery, and buy a gift card if it's an option too.
And there's also a concern of people losing income and not being able to afford food. Have you seen people in the community trying to help out with that?
Yeah, on small scale and large. I think one cool thing that people in one Madison neighborhood have been doing, they turned their little free library into a little free food pantry. So if you've ever just walked around Madison, you've probably seen these little free libraries. There are these little boxes that kind of serve as neighborhood book exchanges. Some people on the east side of Madison have turned theirs into a food pantry and are stocking it with dry goods, as well as a lot of bigger official food pantries and community centers are still operating. Even though they've changed their operations a little bit, a lot of the food pantries around the state, instead of, for example, maybe allowing people to go in and look at what's on the shelf, they're doing drive-through food pantries to kind of limit contact between people and giving people prepackaged food bundles.
And social media, of course, a lot of people are using that to stay connected. What kind of things stuck out to you there?
Yeah, I've just been looking around Facebook to kind of see what people are doing there. I've seen a lot of things on the individual level, on the organizational level. Some nursing homes in Rock County put out a call on Facebook for people to send their residents letters because a lot of nursing homes aren't allowing visitors right now just because elderly people do seem to be more susceptible to the coronavirus. And as well, there's community Facebook groups that are seeing a lot of activity. There's one in particular that started up by Lake Superior. It's called Shawamigan Bay Community Care, where people can share info. One person posted about some wet wipes that she had left on her front stoop for people to go pick up. And there's also a volunteer sign-up page where people can offer to go pick up groceries for an elderly neighbor or give childcare.
Before we let you go, Miranda, WPR has a page with resources available to people. I think this is a growing list at WPR.org/COVID. We've got a link at WPR.org/Central Time. Briefly, what kind of info can people find there?
Yeah, so it's a non-exhaustive list that we're updating pretty continuously. We're just trying to keep track of food pantries that are open around the state and any changes in their services due to the outbreak. Homeless shelters as well, and even tenants' resources if you need help getting anything like that, as well as volunteer opportunities. There's so many different COVID-19 related volunteer opportunities, places asking for extra help in this time.
Miranda, thanks a lot for joining us.
Yeah, thank you.
Miranda Suarez is the WPR Lee Esther News Fellow. She talked to us about how people in Madison and elsewhere in the state are supporting employees, neighbors, and others. Now we head to La Crosse, where school districts in the area are providing free meals to kids who are at home indefinitely after schools closed last week. Olivia Herkin is a digital and local government reporter for the La Crosse Tribune. Olivia, welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Well, Olivia, you did a big profile on one school in particular in Holman. Can you talk about what they're doing to keep food services going to their students?
Right. So Holman School District has six schools in it, and they're offering a pickup site at three different schools where any kid who lives in the school district, 18 or under, can get a meal from them. All they need to do is go on and fill out an online form, and they can pick it up during the lunch hour every weekday.
And you profiled the nutrition staff at the Holman School District. Seems like a really positive bunch of people. Can you tell us some about the people you met there?
Oh, definitely. So the nutrition director, Mike Gasper, all he could say about his team was how dedicated they were. They worked pretty much nonstop over the weekend right after Evers called for the schools to close to make sure that meals were provided right away on Monday for students. And, you know, they're trying to make the meal pickups feel just like, you know, as if the kids were in the cafeteria getting lunch every day. They're still doing their lucky prize drawing that they do every Tuesday. They're playing music outside. They're just trying to make it fun so it seems normal.
And they made the most of it on St. Patrick's Day, it sounds like.
Yes, definitely. They were all dressed in St. Patrick's gear, handing out goodies from a pot of gold. So it was really fun. It seemed like a little party out there, yeah.
And this is something going on around the state. Can you talk about some of the other districts in the La Crosse area and how they're handling meal distribution?
Sure, yeah. So far, it really has not discriminated. For most schools in the area, this is something that they thought of almost immediately, even before figuring out how they would maybe instruct online for the 2.5 weeks. They realized that it was really a necessity right away. And you're seeing it in some of the biggest school districts, like La Crosse, who serves around 20 different schools, down to some of its smallest, like my hometown of Lafarge, who just has a K-12 school of maybe 300 students. So every school is thinking of this. And, you know, I think it's really incredible that it was one of the first plans that the schools thought to do, because for a lot of these students, the meals they get at school might be the only ones or some of the healthiest that they get on a given day. So it's important that that didn't get interrupted.
Olivia, thanks a lot for bringing us up to date.
Thank you.
Olivia Herkin is a digital and local government reporter at the La Crosse Tribune. She joined us to look at how Holman and other school districts in the area are working to provide meals to students who are staying home during the school shutdown. Finally, businesses in the Green Bay area are having to adapt their operations since new regulations went into place. They're also seeing the community step up to support them. Nusaiba Mazan is the business and career reporter for the Green Bay Press Gazette. Nusaiba, welcome to Central Time.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Nusaiba, you've been talking with owners of restaurants and coffee shops and other businesses in the Green Bay area. What's the general mood you're hearing from people there?
Businesses here are very much playing it by ear as different emergency orders are coming in, and they're having to adjust to their customers' buying patterns. So a lot of businesses have shifted to delivery and takeout options. Restaurants now closed have the option to do delivery and takeout, and a lot of stores are doing delivery as well.
And, of course, one of the biggest worries in Wisconsin and elsewhere is employees of these small businesses that are having to close down or reduce operations. What are you hearing about them?
I'm seeing that a lot of business owners are sensitive to the concerns of employees, and they're communicating with them. For example, a flower shop that I talked to that has locations in Green Bay and Appleton said that some of their retiree employees have shown like a sensitivity and are willing to give up or share yield shifts to their coworkers who need it most. A downtown Green Bay restaurant owner told me that she's cognizant of the employees' concerns, and she says that she is trying to keep them on staff, still working, even as their hours shift and they're going to delivery.
And we've heard in some places around the state that loyal customers are still showing up to support in however they can. Have you seen that in the Green Bay area, too?
Yes. Green Bay community members are encouraging each other to buy gift cards just to show the business support right now, and that money, they can spend that money later on when those businesses are back open. So community members are showing up, expressing support online and in person, and buying gift cards.
Nusaiba, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you.
Nusaiba Mazan is a business and career reporter at the Green Bay Press Gazette. She talked with us about how small businesses are dealing with COVID-19 shutdowns or reductions in operation. She wrapped up our look at how Wisconsinites are supporting each other during the outbreak. Coming up Monday, by the way, we're going to have a call-in. You can tell us what's going on in your part of the state, how people are stepping up and helping each other in your community. Coming up, a state lawmaker is hoping to pass a bill that would help homeowners and businesses along the Great Lakes deal with issues caused by erosion. We'll get the details coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, as schools close or shift online across the country, parents and caregivers are concerned about how to keep their kids learning and engaged from home. We'll talk to a pediatrician about what adults can do to help kids at home amid the novel coronavirus outbreak. Now, for the first 2 months of 2020, Lake Michigan broke records for high water levels. That's according to the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers' monthly report on lake levels. High water levels, along with more frequent and more intense storms, can cause problems for homes and businesses along the shoreline, especially when it comes to erosion. Our next guest is hoping to pass legislation to at least help address that issue. Assembly Representative Tip McGuire is a Democrat from Wisconsin's 64th Assembly District, which includes Kenosha, Racine, Summers, and Mount Pleasant. Representative McGuire, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Well, thank you for having me.
Before we get into your proposed legislation, Representative McGuire, can you talk about the problem communities are having with erosion that people maybe away from the Great Lakes aren't as directly familiar with?
Oh, well, sure. So a lot of folks, you know, and this includes municipalities and our governments as well and public infrastructure. But due to the high water levels, the water, just as it moves and during storms, is more likely to erode away at the land that we have, you know, I mean, bordering the lake. And so for people whose private property is there, this obviously it can diminish the value of the private property. It can take away things that people on lakes have probably been using, you know, places where they can dock their boats or other infrastructure like that. And ultimately, it can even, and what we've seen in Kenosha has been rather incredible in Kenosha County, but it's gotten so far in that it's even had some houses fall into the lake by undermining the land that the house is built on. And so it's a real issue for a lot of people who live on the lakeshore.
And this legislation now you're proposing, what would it do to start to address this problem?
Well, yeah, and I'm glad you said that. It is just to start to address the problem, because this is not a cure-all. But what this bill does is it creates a $5 million revolving loan fund. And a revolving loan fund means that you lend the money out, and then as it's paid back with interest, that money goes into the same fund to be lent out to more homeowners. But it creates a $5 million fund to lend to homeowners to be able to put infrastructure in place that can help stop erosion. So certain rock barriers and other things, revetment walls that can help prevent erosion from occurring. However, those pieces of infrastructure are actually very expensive to put in. And so many of the families that live along the lake can't afford to put those up and can't afford to protect their property in that way. I've always thought one of the great things about Wisconsin, and in particular Kenosha and Racine, is that middle-class families can afford to get a house on the lake or a house near the lakeshore. And these people, they work very hard to pay off their home, and they build equity in their houses. And then something like this comes and undermines all of that. So we want to be able to provide a loan to them to be able to protect their property and their investment.
I've talked to some experts on erosion on lakeshores, and one concern is that, okay, if you and I are neighbors and I do a particular kind of protection, it might help me, but it might send more water your way and more erosion your way. Is there a requirement that people using this program get involved in at least some kind of coordination so they're not just lone wolfing their solutions here?
Well, so that was one of the reasons that we wanted to use this approach, actually, is because if people just get individual loans through a bank or through some other mechanism to be able to pay this off, there would be sort of no coordination and not necessarily anybody overseeing the overall picture. But this way, it kind of ultimately is going through the Department of Natural Resources. So a state agency is able to say, well, this sort of project wouldn't work in that manner. Perhaps it could be something else. Perhaps a different sort of project or protection, you know, method of protecting would better benefit us all as well as protect your property.
I know another potential solution that would only work on some sites is to actually move structures further inland. That only applies to people who have that much land. Would a loan like that be able to be used for something like that, moving buildings and other structures out of harm's way?
Well, I'll say when I drafted the bill, that was not quite what I was envisioning, but that's certainly very interesting. I think it would probably end up going through that question would be determined by the administrative rulemaking process that the Department of Natural Resources would have in determining what projects are acceptable under this. I don't specifically prescribe within the legislation what projects are acceptable.
Gotcha.
We try to leave those up to the experts at the agency.
We're talking to Assembly Representative Tip McGuire from southeastern Wisconsin. He's backing legislation that would help get loans to people who live on Great Lakes shorelines who are dealing with problems of erosion caused by high lake levels and more frequent and intense storms. Representative McGuire, that's at the state level. I know you are watching very closely what's happening in Congress, in the U.S. Senate at this point. What are you watching there when it comes to erosion and lake levels?
Well, there have been a number of ways that the federal government has been able to assist. First and foremost, Governor Evers had called for a state of emergency relating to about 3 days of storms we had in January. And that allows FEMA, once you surpass a threshold of damage, that allows the Federal Emergency Management Agency to be able to put funds in to help with public infrastructure. But on top of that, I noticed that there had been a bill that moved through the Federal House of Representatives that had an amendment attached to it from a Republican from Michigan that would provide an additional $50 million for nonprofit organizations as well as public entities to be able to invest in lakeshore protections. And so we and a number of my colleagues joined me on this from both sides of the aisle, wrote a letter to our U.S. senators asking that they pressure Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell into scheduling that bill so we can try and get those funds here in Wisconsin and protect our lakeshore.
So that's the state and federal levels. Are you seeing local governments in your part of the state trying to tackle this problem as well?
Well, I think that local government is almost always the one who is tackling the problem and then hoping to get assistance from state and federal government. I mean, ultimately, you know, when roads or parks or other public infrastructure is damaged by high lake levels and is damaged by, erosion, it ultimately is these governments that are the ones trying to fix those in at least the physical manner. And so I think a lot of times to look for assistance from the state and from the federal government, and we're hoping they'll be able to access that for them.
Getting back to your own proposed legislation, Representative McGuire, the Assembly is done with its session for the year. The Senate is supposed to have another day that's on hold because of coronavirus concerns. What is your best case timeline for getting your loan program for lakeshore communities in place?
Well, I think, unfortunately, I doubt that it will happen this session. What I am hoping to do, and you alluded to this earlier, that is that a lot of people who don't live on lakeshores or live in lakeshore communities, they don't necessarily know about this problem. So what I was really hoping to do this year is to be able to have a public hearing where we can make sure that people who are impacted by this can come up and make other legislators understand the issue, as well as having experts come in and explain why this happened, why our lake levels are so high, and the ultimate damage that it can do in the long run. And so I was hoping to be able to bring more publicity and some more notice to the bill so that other legislators could finally understand this issue, and then perhaps next session we would be able to get something more concrete done. Given the coronavirus, I think it's safe to say we won't necessarily be able to have a public hearing anytime soon, but I am optimistic that we can certainly find a way of making sure that other legislators in the Capitol understand this issue, whether it has to happen this summer or even later. We'll continue pressing on it. I'm confident in that.
We'll watch for that. And Representative McGuire, in our last minute or two, I just wanted to ask how your constituents, how your communities in your district are reacting, what you're hearing from them when it comes to coronavirus.
Well, I think it's certainly been a challenge for everyone. I know a lot of people are either, you know, shut up and shut shut up in their houses or have to go to work in circumstances that give them concern and concern for their families. And I really think, it's inspiring in a certain way to see how many people have come together, even from a distance, to support small businesses and support workers and support the men and women who are our first responders, as well as our doctors and nurses who are doing such a heroic job. I think that's inspiring, and that gives me hope that we're going to be able to pull through this and make sure that as few lives are impacted as possible.
Representative McGuire, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Yeah, well, thank you for inviting me on. I look forward to chatting with you more about these issues in the future.
That's Assembly Representative Tip McGuire, a Democrat from Wisconsin's 64th District, which includes Kenosha, Racine, Summers, and Mount Pleasant. He's sponsoring a bill that would help homeowners and businesses along the shoreline to give them loans that would help deal with erosion from the Great Lakes in times of higher lake levels and more frequent and intense storms. Well, if you're looking out your back window and seeing this problem in action, let us know about it. Love to hear from you. If you've got before and after pictures, you can send those to us. You can email ideas@WPR.org and let us know what's going on your part of the shoreline. Coming up, we'll talk to a Wisconsin pediatrician about how parents and caregivers can keep kids engaged with learning as schools close across the country amid novel coronavirus fears. You can get that conversation started right now. Head over to the Ideas Network Facebook page. If you are at home with a kid, or plural, kids, what are you doing? Are you going a little stir crazy there? Are you actively trying to encourage learning? What kind of activities do you have? What's the division of screen time versus non-screen time? And what question do you have for our guest who's a pediatrician and also a leading advocate for literacy programs here in the state? Get us started over on the Ideas Network Facebook page. I'm Rob Ferret. Stick around. There's more to come on Central Time. You're listening to the Ideas Network here on Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up Monday at 6 on The Morning Show, many Wisconsin farmers have been struggling with tough times for their businesses and for their mental health. Kate Archer-Kent and her guests look at ways farmers can manage their money and their stress. That's Monday morning at 6 here on the Ideas Network. Now, Governor Evers made the decision to close all K-12 schools in the state until at least April 6th amid the novel coronavirus outbreak. The move follows other districts around the country. But for parents and caregivers suddenly thrust in the role of teacher, the next few weeks can feel overwhelming. Our next guest joins us to talk about how adults can keep kids and teenagers learning and engaged as they're stuck at home for the foreseeable future. Dr. Dipesh Navsaria is a pediatrician at American Family Children's Hospital who is deeply involved in Reach Out and Read, an initiative that makes literacy promotion a standard part of pediatric primary care. Dr. Navsaria, thanks a lot for coming back with us on Central Time.
Thank you. My pleasure to be here.
Before we get to learning at home, let's just talk about living at home a little bit. A lot of parents working at home who hadn't been previously with their kids at home. Do you just have some advice on keeping a happy, healthy home atmosphere when we're all caught at home together now?
Yeah, this is certainly a new challenge for many. There are certainly parents out there who have been working from home with their kids at home over time, but for many, this is a completely novel situation. I think in general, it depends on the age of your child. Certainly the older your child, the more that they're able to entertain themselves or actually might prefer that you not bother them while they entertain themselves. Whereas younger children, of course, need much more attention. I think a lot of it depends on trying to set up a schedule and some sense of routine, and also clear communication about when you may not be able to be bothered, or you know, that only emergencies are a good reason for someone coming and interrupting you in the middle of an important phone call or something along those lines. I think that, you know, it's hard to for parents to sometimes give up the feeling of, well, I had this many hours in a day before to work. I should have that many hours. There's going to need to be some give on that because children's needs also need to be met during this time.
Now, getting to the learning side of things, I've seen some people make the case that we don't need to pretend we're turning our home into a school. We don't need to be sitting kids down with textbooks for hours. We can do learning even if we're not doing it exactly like we do it at school. What are some of your basic thoughts on, you know, making sure kids keep on learning and keep engaged?
You know, the amazing thing is in this environment we have now, in this world we have, is that there's so much available online. And it doesn't have to be formal learning. Honestly, the best thing that I always look for is, are children curious about the world around them? Are they figuring out how to learn more about the world around them? And also learn how to identify what's valuable and useful and reliable information. And that doesn't need to be sitting there and doing math problems or writing essays or things like that. But it can be a lot of inquiry that they can really guide and direct on their own. And for some children, this might actually be a very liberating opportunity for them to chase down looking at a topic that isn't something that they've been assigned or told that they need to do.
Let's go to the younger kids now, Dr. Navzaria. And I know there's a lot of guidelines saying even for educational purposes, you don't want too much actual screen time for kids. What are some things we might just do with, you know, the things in our house or looking out the window or in our yard? What kind of things can we do to create an environment?
Well, certainly, you know, it depends on where you're living and what sorts of environment you're in. Certainly, there's nothing wrong with going out into your yard. If you're not in too congested or built up an area, you know, there's nothing wrong with going for a walk as long as you're maintaining appropriate social distancing from people that you might pass near. Walking my dog, I've noticed, you know, people are giving each other a good berth while still waving a friendly hello from a distance, which is a good thing. And then even inside your own home, there can be all sorts of opportunities. You know, I have to say that, you know, people don't think of it this way, but cooking, things you can do in the kitchen is actually an excellent way to learn all sorts of science. And there's excellent web pages and books out there talking about the science of cooking and trying to understand what's going on there. I'll also add that, you know, we discourage screen usage primarily because a lot of screen usage in children is aimed at entertainment or commercialized activities, trying to turn them into consumers, so to speak. It's not that the screen itself is necessarily bad. So the same way that we don't talk about paper time, like, gee, what's on this piece of paper, is more important than, you know, talking about the actual paper itself. Same with screens. It all depends on what you're using the screen for, and are you talking about what your children are viewing on that screen and what they're learning from it, and setting good role models yourself for what they're experiencing on screens.
And for those younger school kids, can you talk to us about scheduling? How do we build some kind of structure into our days?
Mm-hmm. You know, it sounds very simple, but it's amazing how important it is. Even hanging up a sheet of paper with, you know, times and what's being planned, right? Like having a set lunchtime, having a set snack time, saying at this point we're going to go outside and do this, et cetera. Just like a school might, you know, structure a day, it helps give kids a set of expectations, and also that, okay, maybe I shouldn't be whining that I'm hungry, because sometimes that's out of boredom rather than actual hunger. Oh, because I know that lunch is going to be in an hour, you know, or something like that. But it helps to give them that visual, and maybe even giving them the opportunity to check off or put a star sticker next to the day as it goes by will really help offer a lot of that type of structure. And honestly, I think it offers the adults, if you have other adults in the home and you're trying to decide who should care for kids at what time. It also helps everyone think about what are their own strengths and what are the times that they can afford, and it can really help communication between the adults.
Dr. Dipesh Nafzaria is with us, a Wisconsin pediatrician. He's with Reach Out and Read, among many other efforts. We're talking about what to do with kids who are at home to help keep them learning, help keep them engaged while schools are shut down. Dr. Nafzaria, I want to talk to you about an issue I know near and dear to your heart. How about reading with kids?
Reading, of course, as you know, is something that I think is one of the best things you can do for brain development from the youngest ages, including newborns, all the way up through childhood and even into adulthood. I think if there's adults listening to this who don't have children in their lives that they're near, they might consider even reading aloud to each other. You know, of course, the moment this got really personal for me was when the public libraries had to close, which I completely understand from a public health perspective. But apparently, while others were panic buying toilet paper, I was panic placing library holds because I was concerned the libraries would close. So I think taking these opportunities to have times to read aloud together is a great way to do that kind of connection, even if your child is old enough to read and maybe a very fluent reader and might even be a teenager, right? I think there's no problem with sitting down and saying, let's read aloud, right? We don't know how long we're going to be in this situation. So this is a great time to pick up a really engrossing chapter book and to start reading aloud. Maybe take turns or maybe not. Again, depending on what your family prefers to do. I think reading together is actually a great way of doing all these things. And again, if you don't have enough books at home and the libraries indeed are closed where you are, this is a time where even though we know for the youngest children, ebooks are not as good as physical books, they're a pretty good close second given the circumstances.
Let's look at older kids now, and this will be piecemeal around the state, but some districts are already and some are considering getting online learning materials to their kids, trying to keep the coursework going. For those tweens and teens who have this amorphous blob of time, how do we build structure for them to make sure that, you know, they're getting this kind of work done?
That's a great question, and it's something that I easily foresee coming up with my own two teenage children, because suddenly this routine of going to school at from these particular hours and having a class period and all is suddenly going to change. Now, some kids will do great and say, okay, I'm going to write down everything that needs to be done and just go plowing through it because that's what they do. They like to see those check boxes checked. And then there's other kids who will need a lot of help to be able to apply that structure. I think for those older kids, trying to set up some block of time and say, okay, this is your quote-unquote schoolwork time, having them in theory, if you can have them close to where you may be working and letting them work side by side, that might actually be good role modeling. We're both going to sit and do our work. And if you have a quick question, you can interrupt your parent to ask something or at least build up the questions that they have and ask during a break. Anything that can offer that kind of structure. And actually, for some kids, they might prefer to work in the morning for a couple of hours and then do some of work later in the evening rather than working, 6 hours straight through or something like that, which would be challenging.
We're talking to Dr. Dipesh Nafzaria, a pediatrician and children's literacy advocate. He's with us to talk about how parents and caregivers can help keep kids engaged and learning as states close schools amid the novel coronavirus outbreak. You can join in at 800-642-1234. How are you and your family working with children during this time? What questions do you have about how to keep kids interested in learning as they're out of that physical school setting? What are you doing in your own house? Do you got any fun ideas you can share? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our conversation with Dr. Dipesh Nafzaria about how parents and caregivers can keep kids in a learning mindset as they're away from school during the novel coronavirus outbreak. You can join in at 800-642-1234. How are you and your kids handling the transition home during this outbreak? Do you have questions for our guest about keeping kids from being bored while at home? For parents and caregivers who homeschool their kids, do you have some advice to share for parents in this situation all of a sudden? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. Dr. Nafsaria, I want to ask about parents who might be anxious about the coronavirus, about the future of their jobs, extra stress, maybe dealing with the transition to working at home and having the kids at home. Do you have advice for parents to get through that anxiety and stress and still be the best parents they can be?
Yeah, that's a great point there. And it's something that certainly, as in my role as president of the Wisconsin chapter of the American Academy of Pediatrics, I have been trying to encourage people to think about that. While children are not directly impacted by this virus to the same extent that adults, and particularly high-risk adults, are, they still actually bear so much of the burden because of how anxious everyone is and of how the focus can be taken off of what children do continue to need. The impact of the virus on children is particularly emphatic in a psychosocial manner than anything else. So for one thing, I honestly, kids or adults, I think everyone could benefit from sometimes just turning off the news. Turning off, you know, social media. There's a lot of things going on out there and a lot of panic. I think people are right to be concerned and worried, but we don't, just like with any disaster or major world event, I think when you see it over and over and over again, as an adult that wears on you, and kids can not sometimes recognize that it's not that the same thing's happening over and over. It's one instance or one continuous situation. So kind of trying to not necessarily shield them completely from what's going on, but make sure that they're not being immersed in it constantly, and being a good role model in that way, I think is really important. I think it's also important to be relatively straightforward with kids, but also reassuring, you know, that, look, you know, this is something that is serious, but we're also trying to do this to help out everyone, and that people, lots of people, are working really hard on it, not just doctors and nurses and healthcare and hospitals, but lots of other people in public health, the grocery, you know, supermarket folks are trying to make sure everyone has food, childcare workers are available, et cetera, are all working together to try to make sure that we can beat this all together. And I think that can be remarkably reassuring for children, and I also hope for adults.
Are there resources out there you'd point people toward, whether online or service agencies or anything like that, with people who have questions about working with their kids at home, especially when it comes to education?
Yeah, certainly. You know, in terms of talking to your kids and how to adjust to all these things, I generally send people to the American Academy of Pediatrics parent portal, which is called healthychildren.org. And right on the front page there, they have a page that summarizes all the resources around COVID-19. And that's, of course, getting updated virtually every single day that's out there. And there's a lot of things on there about how to talk to your kids, about how to keep yourself healthy and your family healthy and all of those things. I know that the WPR page on this will also be linking to a number of different articles about how to talk to your children about this and about schools and being at home and what you can and can't do with your kids. And those are all, there's so much coming out that it's almost impossible to keep up. I think every hour that goes by, I see some new resource that's been made freely available or a new thing that's coming online. One thing that I thought was really lovely that I didn't even know had been going on for several years, but they sped up the release on it this year, is the New York Academy of Medicine has a set of coloring book pages that are contributed by world museums. I think something over 100 museums, and it's kind of a change from the usual type of coloring. And you can take these and print them out and be coloring in these wacky kind of, you know, Egyptian hieroglyphics and all sorts of things. And I think it's just a change of pace and very different from what the usual is.
We're talking to Dr. Dipesh Nafsaria, pediatrician at American Family Children's Hospital. He's also involved in Reach Out and Read. That's an initiative that makes literacy promotion a standard of part of pediatric primary care. He is with us to talk about educating kids at home, or at least try to keep them learning and actively engaged while students are away from school for at least a couple weeks, maybe longer. Dr. Nafsari, if this goes on longer than just that couple weeks, do you have thoughts on how we can, I don't know, build systems to try to make sure that even though kids aren't in school, they're not losing this, what, quarter of a school year?
You know, the thing is, people are already working on that. I know that many school districts, the teachers are working away busily to try to figure out how can they convert things to at least some virtual options. We may not be able to scale up the ability to do interactive things online as quickly as we'd like. One of the challenges is that not all families have broadband internet access or computers that can handle that. This week alone, I think many in the business and other communities have discovered small outages or glitches in the online video conferencing systems as suddenly everyone's doing that. But I think that we can get there and try to figure out what's actually feasible. Of course, the goal is to say, how can we get back to doing business as usual, face-to-face, reopen the schools, and so on. But I wouldn't view the loss of a quarter as being some mass impediment to children's learning. I think I would view this as, well, there's a lot we can still learn from this, and that, you know, everyone is being affected by this. So everyone will have to kind of get back into normalcy at some point, which is different from it happening to just a few people.
Let's bring on a caller now. Jan is with us in Middleton. Jan, hi.
Hi. I was just having fun the other day online, and I found that Betty White and other actors are reading children's books online, and I was enthralled. I thought they were great. But the other thing is that there are also astronauts in the space station who are doing that. And one of the things that's really cool about that is the woman that was reading the book had her hair tied back and her ponytail was all filed straight out behind her. And so it was not only she was reading this book about a little girl wanting to be an engineer, but she was also visually interesting herself. So those are a couple other things, and I'm sure you can just Google what it is online and come up with it if you want to. But
I love it, Jan. Thank you so much. I know authors are doing readings of their books as well, so we can read to our kids, but we can bring in some special guest stars, Dr. Nafsaria.
Certainly, and you know, there's so many of those I didn't even know about the astronauts reading out loud. It's kind of too bad that we need to have a global pandemic in order to bring those sorts of things, have those sorts of things happen, or at least be made more prominent. Reach Out and Read, actually, we are working on doing that as well, and bringing some of our staff and healthcare providers who are available to record themselves reading out loud in a similar way as well.
Thanks for that call, Jan. That reminds me, on Monday, we're going to talk to a senior at Stratford High here in Wisconsin who's hosting an online story time. He had been, I gather, reading to younger kids in person. He's moved that online now. Dr. Nafsaria, how about leaving us with some thoughts? Maybe kids, older kids in particular, who want to find ways to help the community during these time of school closures.
Yes. You know, I mean, while we're certainly trying to have people limit their exposure to one another, if you're able to consistently help with children that are nearby that you can be with the same kids, that can be a great help to families who are trying to perhaps continue working from home. You know, again, I wouldn't endorse people going right and being with many different kids, but I think that can be helpful. And they can be a good role model in helping children read aloud and helping spend time with them, ask them questions, maybe explore their yards, you know, things like that. And a lot of these things can be done even remotely. If you have a nephew or a niece or a cousin that's younger, even in another state, getting on, you know, FaceTime or one of the other video chat apps, you know, there's a lot of opportunity, and even just 15 minutes of that can really be a break in the day for everyone and really provide a connection, because so much of this is still about maintaining social connection. And we know that those socio-emotional relationships are really what children need, because that's what makes them resilient through times like this.
Dr. Nafsaria, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
That's Dr. Dipesh Nafsaria, a Wisconsin pediatrician. He joined us for a look at how parents and caregivers can keep kids learning while schools are closed. Coming up tomorrow on Central Time, a Wisconsin public health expert joins the show with the latest on efforts to slow the spread of COVID-19 in Wisconsin and around the world. That and much more coming up Monday here on Central Time.